You're listening to Coleman Power on the Organic Fitness Podcast.
All right, welcome to the latest episode of the Coleman Power Organic Fitness Podcast. I have my latest guest in front of me, Cathy, aka the Culinary Celt. How are we, Cathy?
Good, Coleman. Thanks for having me on today.
No problem at all. I suppose a fellow author like myself, okay, Cork-based at this moment in time. I suppose we're going to be talking about all things food, seasonality, I suppose, and on top of that, the power of words and marketing, and touching on definitely, I suppose, mental health, all-inclusive of foods being linked with it. I suppose if you want to let the listeners or the viewers even know a little bit about, I'm going to say your background or how you got into it even in the first place.
Coleman, I'm based here in North Cork. I'm blessed, really. We're in the Golden Vale, the heart of really good quality food county. And I grew up actually on a farm. My parents are farming for the past 50 years. And I suppose when I say farming, it would have been a more traditional kind of style of farming, you know, not as commercialized as a lot of farming has gone now in more recent years. A few years ago, I actually went back to study my master's in marketing. And I did my thesis actually on branding Cork as a food tourism destination. And from that, then I actually, I kind of developed the Culinary Celt in terms of a brand then in 2018. And I really wanted, I suppose, a platform to educate people. You know, food is a really important part of our you know, day-to-day lives, and how we fuel ourselves is so important to our, as you touched on, our well-being and mental health. So I've been working in that space for the last, you know, few years in terms of educating people. And it's amazing, really, you know, the kind of basic things that I would kind of take for granted that people don't necessarily kind of know or realize, or, you know, that they're, you know, kind of not intuitively, they don't understand. That's how I kind of, you know, my background and how I kind of really got into it.
Lovely. I suppose you'd be a major advocate of, and even doing different talks, and that's where we first kind of met. But it was either in the Cork show, am I right in saying that? Cork City Hall.
The Cork and Kerry Food Market, yeah, here in the City Hall, yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose tell the listeners a little bit about what you would literally advocate for, and or what you do your different events and or talks about.
Yeah, so a lot of my events are centered on sustainability, well-being, zero waste as well. Over the years as well, we've become very wasteful in terms of food, and it's at a crisis point now, you know, in terms of you know, climate change and global warming. So, you know, food, like I figure there recently that I came across when I was doing a bit of research, is back in 2021 in Ireland alone, we wasted 29% of all food produced. And that, like, for me is just, you know, there's like, it's the figures are starting. That's just in Ireland alone.
Is that in food waste, I suppose, either on the farm? Is it either lost in the shop, or is it something that's accumulated at or the home?
It's a culmination. So it's all food produced. So it's a culmination of all of those, you know, aspects. But, you know, a lot of it would be, you know, in stores and shops, and, you know, people, you know, when you bring it home and you overbuy, and that's a problem a lot of the time, that, you know, you're going to a supermarket or a shop, or it could be a small local shop, and you end up buying more than you actually you know, need. So, like, I find that it's important to kind of have, you know, a bit of a structure, you know, when you are going food shopping. I have a few tips and stuff that I kind of say to people, like, before I go out shopping, I would always take a picture of what's inside my fridge, you know, just on the phone. Great. So if I go in and I kind of go, oh, I need to get yogurt, and then I kind of look at the picture and I kind of, oh, I actually have two pots of yogurt, so I don't actually need it. It's my way of cutting back and reducing, you know, buying extra stuff that ultimately will just go to waste.
Totally. That's and again, I'm a major fan of, I suppose, simple little tips. Never thought of that actually taking a photograph of the fridge or the presses or anything else for that matter. I myself use the likes of my notes on my phone and have only just a list of the regulars, right? That's the spices, that's the yogurts, that's the meats, that's the eggs, that's any other fruits or veg or anything else that I would literally want on a regular basis. And I go, oh yeah, I don't have that. That's only from memory. And sometimes I forget.
Yeah. Well, I find the picture kind of like, it gives me an idea. If I have something that, if I want to make something, that it'll give me an idea for other things that I'd need for recipe as well. So having kind of the full, you know, lot in the picture, like typing it's another good way, but I find the picture kind of works for me in that sense, you know?
Yeah, totally. I suppose you having your background in the likes of marketing, I suppose maybe further expand on the likes of how important and powerful the likes of words are in itself.
I suppose with marketing, it's quite complex, you know, issue in that, you know, companies want you to buy their products. And, you know, I suppose it's up to us then as consumers, and that's me included, you know, to kind of manage, you know, our own lives and like manage the fact that we, you know, we bring food into the home, but ultimately, you know, we don't want to waste it. On, you know, actually purchasing it and spending our hard-earned money on buying stuff that just goes into the bin. And then B, being, you know, the amount of work that goes into producing food, and having grown up in a farm, you know, like farmers put a huge amount of work into, you know, the actual process of, you know, producing and processing it even before it gets to the shelves. So I think even just becoming aware that like an item doesn't just appear on a shelf, like there's a huge amount of work that goes in to the process before that in terms of the production and the, you know, the manual labor as well and the hard work that goes into it. And I suppose I kind of, you know, I know that from growing up with my mum and dad around, like, you know, they've always been out, you know, 5 a.m. in the morning working hard, like, you know.
Physical labor. I suppose that's a lot of things that people don't often see, the effort, the time, the work that goes into it, whether it's on the likes of the bank holiday, most certainly weekends where the animals on door, the plants don't take time off, whether it's your birthday, whether it's anniversary, Valentine's Day, we're just after passing it here when recording of this show. The idea is, right, we have to, I suppose, be super grateful for what we have. And Ireland is a great country for, I suppose, foods in general, and food being produced, and Cork being a super county in itself. I suppose with the likes of seasonality, how do you, I suppose, encourage more and more people to do that, and or what do you even recommend?
Well, I suppose when I published my book, I actually developed some practical tools and techniques, and one being my Celt Mindful Eating Model. And that's an acronym for the C is to consider your food source, where your food actually comes from. And the E is to enjoy and be present. And the L is to love your food. And the T then is to take notice of your feelings, how the food actually makes you feel. So although you may love certain kind of foods, they may not be, you know, necessarily good for your metabolism or for a particular stage that you're in your life as such, you know, in terms of nutrition. So I suppose it's just really kind of breaking it down and kind of, you know, making it in such a way that people can actually kind of come back to those four, the CELT, in the framework and the model.
How did you come up with that day one in relation to, I suppose, breaking it down to those four pillars in relation to the C, the E, the L, love your food and take notice of your feelings being the T?
I suppose I kind of wanted it really to cover all important aspects that were important to me. And by having it as an acronym, I think people kind of, you know, it's easy for people to kind of remember, you know, being the CELT. Then I suppose kind of developing on from the seasonality and a seasonal eating approach, as you know, Coleman, you know, when we eat in the season, like we're actually eating with the rhythm of nature, you know, so we're eating foods that are grown, you know, they're grown in that particular season, and we're getting the you know, optimal nutrition from the foods that we're eating. versus kind of foods that are grown out of season, you know, they just, you know, don't tend to be as nutrient dense. So I suppose really the other kind of framework that I've developed then is the Health Mindful Eating Matrix. And the matrix involves the spring, summer, autumn and winter. So the kind of spring pertains to self-reflection. It's a good time to kind of self-reflect in terms of where you're at with your food. The summer is about discovery and kind of learning. You know, we're always learning about food. And even as we, you know, go through different cycles of our own, you know, kind of life, we eat differently as well. Like our patterns, you know, kind of change over the centuries. So like what style of eating I had in my 20s and 30s, I not necessarily have now, you know, in my mid 40s. So it's all kind of, you know, different kind of stages as well. Then the autumn is about understanding and acceptance, like understanding, you know, our habits and our behaviors and kind of emotional eating and what kind of triggers us. And then the winter pertains to self-love. And I think that's a really important season where we can sometimes become a bit, you know, fragmented from, you know, our relationship with food. And we need to kind of give ourselves a little bit of, you know, kind of TLC, if you want to call it.
Yeah, totally. And again, food is medicine and so, so important. We cannot out-train a bad diet. What we're actually looking to do is get back to people eating more single ingredient foods from as local products as you possibly can. One of the best places, I suppose, for people to do it is firstly, either go, if they don't do any growing themselves, to a country market, a health food shop, because those are the places that literally get the local growers, producers to drop in the local eggs, to drop in whatever food is in season.
And a lot of people would say, no, do I grow a lot? And I personally, like, I do grow bits and pieces, but I actually support producers because I like to support somebody's livelihood. And, you know, I go to people, I spend my time kind of sourcing people that I know, I've been to their place, you know, in terms of where they grow this stuff, and I can see how they, you know, actually the work they do. And so you can kind of do that in various different ways. Like you can grow your own, or you can source equally, or you can use a basket of both. You know, I think there's no rights or wrongs when it comes to food anyway, you know.
Totally. I suppose even, Cathy, maybe to expand on your experiences when you do go to a country market, because I know there'll be listeners of this, right, they go, I actually haven't been to a country market. What is the benefit? Why do you go? Or what's the crack? Fill me in, like.
There's great crack at farmers markets. Farmers are really nice people, and they're passionate about, you know, what they do. It's kind of their social outing, really. You know, for a lot of, you know, for example, my local farmers market is here in Killavullen in North Cork, and we're the second oldest farmers market actually in Cork, Middleton being the oldest and then Killavullen being the second oldest. So we're 22 years a farmers market this November. But the farmers that come to produce there have your staples, you know, potatoes, carrots, leeks, onions, and then, you know, some other kind of maybe like Swiss chard, you know, depending on, you know, how adventurous they may feel in terms of growing different things, you know, each kind of year. But they are very sociable and they love chatting and they love talking about, you know, the food and how they actually, you know, planted it and, you know, produced it. And a lot of the time, you know, they don't go there to make millions, you know, they just want to kind of sell their produce, and they have their wares on the table and that's it, you know.
They just want to provide a service, because there's nothing more fulfilling than sowing a seed and knowing it's actually going to benefit someone. Okay. It doesn't cost millions. The idea that some people even say it is expensive. Food is going to completely change your life, especially that type of food that literally is grown by farmers, whether male or female. The idea is that contains every vitamin and mineral in the world, because it is every vitamin and mineral is located in the soil. What's in the soil is then taken up by the plants. People that consume them then have the full spectrum of vitamin A, D, E, K, healthy fats, proteins, and essential amino acids.
And a lot of people, I know you said there, you know, can be more expensive, but I suppose, you know, in comparison to what I would always say to people, you know, like if you're paying an extra 50 cents for, you know, a head of cabbage or well, you know, whatever carrots or, you know, a bunch of carrots or whatever, that's much cheaper than paying 60 euros to a doctor, you know, because a lot of, you know, our, you know, illness these days, I don't like to call it disease, but illness is actually food related. So, you know, be it, you know, heart disease or, you know, kind of any kind of stomach ailments or, you know, anything like that. Like, you know, a lot of the time people are going to, you know, use medicines when, as you said, you know, the food can be your medicine. So, yeah, it may not necessarily be more expensive. Depends on how people, you know, if you view it in silo, maybe yes. But if you view it as a bigger picture, no, you know.
Yeah, oh, that's a great point. And even to expand on that, it's again, it's not just looking at it at just that single individual point of can purchase at a counter. It's more so looking at the long-term benefits, right? If people want more energy, I would highly recommend getting things local. I would highly recommend it getting from a farmer who tells you what exactly was applied to it, or more so that wasn't applied to it any one given time, right? Even that idea that, again, right, food being so important for the likes of your gut, right? Because excess amount of either harsh chemicals or even processed foods cause inflammation. Inflammation is the root cause of all and numerous different diseases. And again, when we improve our gut health, we're not only improving the likes of our overall physical health, but our mental health. And that's something that you'd be a major advocate of as well. As we wait for this to load, it will come back. I'm certain this is the second time this has happened today. I can guarantee it. We're back on, I'm sure, Kathy. We're just talking about mental health.
Oh, yes, in terms of mental health, food is so, I mean, it's critical. And I think more so in the last decade, a lot of the research that I did for the book series that I contribute to, it's called Mental Health for Millennials. Food is extremely, like it's a powerhouse in terms of, you know, how the gut fuels the, you know, mind and how they kind of work in you know, tandem.
Yeah, and that's it. The gut literally produces 90% of your serotonin. That's your happy hormone. And on top of that, 70% of your immune system is located there. So the idea is when you're eating an improved and a better diet that contains, I'm going to say, the spectrum of the rainbow, the greens, the purples, the reds, the oranges, the carrots, the Brussels sprouts, the anything else that you can get your hands on that contains, again, numerous different colors. And that's why you'd often hear that on social media or from nutritionists, such as myself, like, eat the rainbow. We keep it as simple as we possibly can.
And I find a lot of the seasons, the kind of color, or like color code, like a lot of the seasons, color coding kind of comes into it as well, in terms of like autumn can be a lot of the oranges, you know, like your pumpkins, and your summer then is more kind of reds, like your strawberries and your beetroots. And so you can actually, like, if you can kind of link, you know, because for a lot of people, they may not necessarily kind of, the picturing things can be easier than, you know, trying to retain and remember, you know, information. But just even kind of those small little cues and kind of saying, yeah, now we're in springtime, so a lot of our greens now will be, you know, sort of in season at the moment, you know, like asparagus and, you know, all your kind of leafy greens as well.
Totally. Yeah, we can, even while we're here now, we'll start off on going through some of the seasons and the fruits and or vegetables that come into season for particular reasons. So greens, full of magnesium. So that's rainbow chard, that's kale, that's your oriental salads, which are rocket, mansuna, tatsoi, pak choy. And if you haven't heard of these, it's because you're not going to country markets enough, and that we would recommend that you get your ass down there and get your hands on.
And the wild garlic is in season at the moment. So if you can find it, it's like gold. It's fabulous for making soups as well. Potato and wild garlic soup is fabulous.
So, right. Yeah, wild garlic. And that's something you don't even have to grow at all. That's literally foraging.
Yeah, foraging. I'm a big advocate of foraging, yes.
Oh, love it. Oh, what else are you into foraging-wise?
Mushrooms, berries as well, you know, like blackberries or you know, just different berries. Actually, I did a talk recently in one of the primary schools, and most of the kids didn't actually know what a gooseberry was. There was only 3 in a class of 28 that actually knew what a gooseberry was, so I had to show them a picture of a gooseberry and explain where it grows and, you know, what, you know, you can actually make out of it.
Yeah, and then there's not only the green gooseberry for some people, again, the listeners of this, may, I actually know what a gooseberry is. There's purple and even sweeter varieties. Pink Himalayan is a one that you'd literally eat like a grape straight from a prickly bush or shrub that some people may, listeners of this, mightn't even know what a gooseberry is. Never mind the poor old children who are only starting off on their, I suppose, venture.
And I suppose a lot of that is because, as well, you know, when we get busy in our day-to-day lives, we just, you know, forget, we kind of presume, like younger generations, to be fair, you know, have information on the internet, and, you know, but unless, you know, information is passed down from generation to generation in terms of our food culture, you know, a lot of, you know, heritage gets lost as well. Really kind of, that's very important to me, like our food history, because as you touched on, like, we have a fantastic island. We're one of the most food secure countries in the world. I think we're ranked number two at the moment. We were number one there a few years ago. So it's like, you know, we have a huge pool of resources, but it's to support that pool before it starts, you know, kind of disappearing. Because it is, as we speak, there's probably, you know, places kind of, you know, unfortunately making a decision to close because they're not being supported.
Yeah, and I absolutely love and totally reiterate that point, that there is a huge history of food being produced in Ireland. Because you go back as far as our grandparents, or even our parents, and then our grandparents' grandparents, that is what they used to do. They all used to have carrots, turnips, spuds, I'm going to say, and tomatoes in porches that they grew for themselves to keep themselves healthy. Because people were healthier years ago because they didn't have this ultra-processed food at a fingertip when they stopped into a petrol station and had something that had 20 grams of protein with added vitamins on the side of the bar.
And another thing as well, I think when we speak about eating with the seasons, you know, and seasonal eating, a lot of people always just tend to think of fruit and vegetables, and that's kind of pretty much eating with the seasons. But it's very important to remember as well that if some of the listeners are meat eaters, like, meat also has a season as well, if you are eating with the cycle of nature. So the winter rule is four days in the winter, except for lamb. So by that, you know, a lot of the marketing, as I mentioned and touched on, you know, why do we eat turkey at Christmas, you know, when it's not in season? It's because it was marketed to us over the last few centuries. We really should be eating, you know, well, I personally, for the last 14 years, eaten beef for my Christmas dinner because it's actually in season. So it's important to know about meat as well, if, you know, if some listeners are meat eaters, that meat actually, like, because you're eating with the cycle of the animal as well, and if you're eating good quality meat that's been produced, you know, kind of humane and well, then, you know, you're eating with that cycle as well.
That's so interesting. I've only just, after coming off a second podcast there today, this is my second one, I was with Orla O'Flaherty, and she was all for, again, eating with the seasons, and stews being, again, good for the gut health being linked with physical and mental health. And then again, it's been reiterated, and from yourself, and I'd be an advocate of that too, is the idea of, okay, eating the best foods that you possibly can get your hands on, right, at optimal levels in between, sorry, in the season that it is, I suppose, readily available.
Yeah. So that would be, you know, and that's not relevant for, you know, everybody, you know, because obviously, you know, some people are maybe vegan or vegetarian, or, but, you know, it is important, if you are a meat eater and you are consuming meat, that you understand the importance of the cycles as well, in terms of the way, you know, the animal has been, you know, kind of produced, and that kind of, you know, food chain as such.
Yeah. I suppose with you, again, being someone who's into the likes of zero waste, what are your, I suppose, your solutions and or even tips for anything, any of the listeners of the show about, I suppose, minimizing it, reducing it, and improving it on their own, I suppose, current lifestyle?
I suppose with food waste, I know there's a huge narrative that's very popular in the last, I suppose, you know, 10 or 12 years here in Ireland, in terms of recycling. And I know it's very topical at the moment with the new reverse, you know, recycling scheme for the, you know, the plastic bottles.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would kind of urge people to take two steps backward from recycling. So first of all, you know, like, do we actually need the item? You know, like, actually, you know, deciding to, you know, purchase it in the first place. In the second instance, then, is there something that we already have that we can repurpose or kind of reuse? So giving something a kind of at least a life before it actually, you know, goes past its, you know, use by date, or best before date, before we actually look at recycling. Because I think a lot of people think, oh, sure, look, I'll just put that into the, you know, the, you know, brown bin and, you know, it's fine, it'll compost and stuff. But you're actually feeding into the, that, you know, wastage, like, you know, so if in the first instance you don't actually buy it, then it's not actually even, it doesn't go that far in the chain. So I think that would be my tip for people, you know, just recycling just means that we're pushing the problem to somewhere else. It stays in the planet, like, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose we have, again, we have the power to, I suppose, in our purchasing. So when you're going into a store that has apples that are wrapped in, I'm going to say, some sort of plastic that more often than not actually can't even be recycled if you took a closer look at it, it's then our choice to either not consume those, get something that is not wrapped in plastic. Take the example, if you are purchasing from the likes of, I'm going to say, a country market, more often than not, they're now using biodegradable bags. Again, and often on top of that, you can bring your own bag for literally rainbow chard that may, or greens or kale that might be wrapped in necessarily an elastic band that you can then, I suppose, just again reuse, or again minimize what you do buy that has plastic around it.
Or even thinking about what you use a lot in the week. Like I remember 12 years ago, I decided I didn't want to use tea bags anymore. And it was because I did a lot of research on plastics and, you know, putting hot water on plastic. You know, you can kind of figure out how not good that would be for you to consume. So I use the loose leaves. And then, like, you can actually, the loose leaves compost pretty, you know, pretty much. The same with the coffee grinds. You know, I know over the years, like, those pods have been marketed to us, you know, the coffee pods.
Coffee pods, yeah.
But, you know, again, they take up to 200 years to break down at landfill, like, you know. So, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's like, and I know we might think that, you know, there's, we'll say, schemes where, you know, some companies take back the pods, but you've still bought, like, they've still been produced, like, so they're still going to go to a landfill somewhere, you know, if you do buy them. So unless, as consumers, we, you know, make our own choices and to not buy into that system, the system won't change. You know, if there's no demand, there won't be a supply. So that's the only way that we can actually kind of, you know, change things.
Yeah, that's it. We have the power, and we are in, I suppose, the year of 2024. And I suppose, Cathy, that's why I suppose I brought you on here, to emphasize the fact of local foods, emphasize yourself being someone who's a major advocate of it. And I suppose if there's any place, just before we wrap it up, to, for the listeners, to get in contact with you if they want to know more information and or get their hands on your book.
So my website is www.theculinarykelt.com, and I'm under The Culinary Celt on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you know, the social media platforms. So any of those outlets will get to me.
Yeah. So what I'll do is I'll put that all in the show notes for people who want to get in contact with yourself and or get their hands on the book that you most certainly wrote, if they'll save it.
Thank you very much, Coleman. And I saw your book in the Urban Co-op when I was down there at Christmas, and it was flying off the shelves. A lot of people were buying it for Christmas gifts. I was chatting to a few people.
Yeah, the Urban Co-op is another major, I suppose.
I love it. I love them. I love everything they do. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, Anne-Marie, who runs it down there, would be very pally with her. And did a talk there in January, down again, I suppose, about organic produce and that being, I suppose, the gold standard. Things grown without the likes of harsh chemicals. And again, it's just about highlighting it. And that's why I wrote the book in itself. But yeah, I suppose, thanks for coming on. And I always end these shows, Cathy, by saying, stay tuned, stay classy, and keep it organic.